Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Michael Collins Piper coming to you from Washington, D.C., where the weather is never what it is the day before. One day it's cold. Yesterday or the day before it was 77 degrees. Now it's cold outside. I don't know what to make of it, folks. But, you know, I'll tell you what, I guess the weather here is as mixed up as the crooked, low-down, low-lifes that we have in the United States Congress and sitting in the White House. Well, we are here tonight for beginning. This is the second night beginning this broadcast at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central. And I'm hoping we have a bigger audience than we did before. I suspect we probably do just because of the timing. So that's the good news. In any case, we are still a one-hour broadcast here. And I hope the quality remains the same, if indeed you think this is a quality broadcast. In any case, folks, it was a very interesting weekend, if only interesting because of the fact that our friends in Israel have made the threat that they will use nuclear weapons on Iran to prevent Iran from building nuclear weapons. That's a threat, folks. It seems to me that the civilized world should come down on this threat by the Israelis to use nuclear weapons, but thus far we haven't heard any substantive responses to it. Well, folks, last week I talked about the need to clean up the Patriot movement, and there's been a real poison inserted into the Patriot movement that's deliberately impacted upon American Free Press, as you well know. And that's the newspaper I write for out of Washington, D.C., and, of course, also the Barnes Review History magazine. And it became a big issue on this show several months ago, and it's not an issue that's about to go away. And it's this bizarre behavior by two characters on the Internet, now joined by a third character, who have been doing everything they can to attack as many people as possible in the American nationalist movement. Their activities are very reminiscent to the old DiGuello attacks on American patriots back in the late 1970s, where they were constantly attacking people saying they were Jews or crypto-Jews or Zionist agents or sexual perverts or one thing or another. And this is exactly what we have been getting for the last year or so from a character named Daryl. He goes by the name Daryl Bradford Smith, but his name apparently is Daryl Sater or Daryl Setter. No one really seems to know exactly what his real name is. There's very few people that seem to have ever met this guy. And then he has a character who is working with him named Eric Hufschmidt. I call him Fishbait, of course. And his brother-in-law is the son of Rupert Murdoch, the Zionist media titan. And yet no one really seems to have questioned as to why Mr. Hufschmidt should suddenly just pop out of nowhere and suddenly become some expert that should be listened to. The same with this Daryl Bradford Smith. Now, unfortunately, Smith and Hufschmidt co-opted someone who seemed quite normal and quite sane, my colleague at American Free Press, Christopher Boleyn. And now Boleyn is quite in bed with Hufschmidt and Smith, their partners. So they describe themselves on their Internet website and on their Internet broadcast. And one of the people they have been trying to manipulate and trying to turn against American Free Press and other patriots is Eustace Mullins. Well, Eustace is not going to have any more to do with that, and he's on board with us tonight. We'll bring Eustace up. You all know who Eustace Mullins is. He hardly needs an introduction, but we're going to bring him up in a minute. This is Michael Collins Piper coming to you from Washington. Good evening, or I should say welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Michael Collins Piper coming to you here on the Republic Broadcasting Network, courtesy of that wonderful all-natural cure for headaches. Headaches Stay Gone. Check it out on the Internet at headachesstaygone.com or give them a call at 800-327-0727. Folks, most of you out out there listening, if you've been involved in the Patriot movement for even 6 months or a year, you probably know the name of Eustace Mullins. I've traveled all over the world, and there's people all around the world who know the name Eustace Mullins. I had someone come up to me in Malaysia and ask me if I knew Eustace Mullins. So it was a great triumph, I suppose, for me. It tickled me to death to be able to say, oh, yeah, I've known Eustace for years. In fact, you know, my book, The New Jerusalem, is dedicated in part to Eustace Mullins. I describe him as the American intellectual whose studies introduced me to the intrigues few would ever write about. And Eustace has written about them in his books, The World Order, The Secrets of the Federal Reserve, a book that I must say has probably been pirated by hundreds of people, if not thousands, over the years. But it remains, Eustace's writings on the Federal Reserve System remain the standard on the subject. It's really fruitless for anything to write any more about it because it's already been written. And, you know, a few years ago when I had the opportunity to speak at a conference in New Orleans hosted by David Duke, Eustace was there. He was supposed to be on the one of the speakers, but things got so screwed up down there that a lot of the people who were supposed to speak didn't get a chance to speak. But that was just an unfortunate turn of events. But I am pleased to say that when I had my moment in the spotlight, I took a couple minutes out of that moment, so to speak, and introduced Eustace from the audience, because I don't think I would have had the model of exactitude, so to speak, in writing and research. The line was drawn in the sand by Eustace Mullins in the quality that he's put forth, and I felt it was appropriate for me, having been inspired by Eustace, to take time from my time to introduce him from the audience. Well, with that, I am introducing Eustace to the audience. Eustace, welcome aboard.
Oh, glad to be on the show, Mike.
Yeah, Eustace, so we talked off the air about some things that have been going on the last couple, last couple months, and that's been this deliberate effort by this Daryl Bradford Smith to try to use you as a sounding board to attack me personally and David Duke and Willis Cardo and lots of other people that have fallen into Daryl Bradford Smith's gun sights. And, you know, you told me you've never even met the guy. Isn't that correct, Eustace?
No, I've never met him. He's a voice on the telephone. I don't know what he looks like. Never seen a picture of him. And he even wants me to move to France and stay with him.
Well, that would be a pretty dangerous thing to do, considering the fact that a lot of the things that you write would probably get you thrown into jail in France.
Oh, France is almost as bad as Germany with the hate laws, and of course it's a completely Jewish country, so I would feel like I'd be in Tel Aviv.
Well, that's exactly right. I gather, Eustace, from what you told me, that he seems to call you up and kind of try to pump you for information or try to put words in your mouth, and then he gets you on the air and just starts running at the mouth himself.
Oh, he does, and he leads me on about things that I have no interest in whatsoever. And I've been in the patriotic movement for over 60 years, and when I came into it, it was after World War II, there were dozens of small Irish groups and Ukrainian groups and German groups all over the country, and they were all real good patriots. And enemy agents went into every one of those groups and destroyed every one of them. Not one of them left today.
I know one guy that you knew, and we used to have an old friend named DeWest Hooker, and I talked about Hooker on this program.
Oh, Hooker was my closest friend. I've been at his home for years.
He was a great man, and both of you guys knew somebody that I didn't know, but it was Stanford Griffith, who was an agent of the Anti-Defamation League.
He was the chief intelligence agent of the entire ADL. He was a top man.
Yeah, that's right. I remember Hooker used to tell me stories about him, and in fact, I mentioned him in my new book, The Judas Goats. In fact, I have a whole chapter. I don't know if you had a chance to look at that yet.
No, I haven't gone through it entirely.
I've got a whole chapter on Hooker in there, and some of his experiences with these Zionist groups that were using people.
Oh, he did try to work with all of them, and he had plenty of money, so he could entertain them. We used to go to a farm in the country. And spend the weekend with Sanford Griffiths. And Sanford Griffiths is the guy whose perjury sent my friend George Sylvester Viereck to prison for 6 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. was
Griffith testified that Varick, who was a harmless poet, was planning to blow up the main bridges all around Manhattan.
Well, this is the kind of thing. Okay, this is the kind of thing. What we've got going on with the.
Well, that's what you get into. Anybody can get into this, and I'm alone, and I speak without notes, and I do a dozen talk shows a week, and I have no notes of anything I ever say, and so when people say, "Oh, you said so and so and so and so," and I'm appalled because I would never have any reason to say that.
You know, it's funny, Eustace. I kind of know what you're talking about because over the years, and I do this show now every night, but over the years I would do radio programs and people would come back and ask me about something I had mentioned on a radio program, and in those days, I would totally forget about it because it's called, all of a sudden, you know, you're talking on the air to a voice, you know, and they're asking you questions, and sometimes, you know, I had someone here calling this program one time who was apparently trying to lead me into endorsing violent acts of, you know,
oh, yes, that's
violence.
A typical FBI tactic.
Yeah. Now this guy Smith has apparently perfected this as one of his operations. And
well, I really think so because judging from my experiences with him, this has been a deliberate entrapment.
Yeah, now, you know, this is the funny thing about it. Christopher Boleyn, who worked very, very closely with American Free Press, so we trusted Christopher implicitly. When I was out of town for 2 months, in fact, it was around the time when you were supposed to go to Japan. Remember, I was working with the folks in Japan to try to get you your tickets and everything.
Oh, yeah.
That was the same time that I was going to Malaysia. I actually asked Christopher to sit in on my program as my guest host for 2 or 3 weeks. And, you know, they've actually gotten Christopher convinced, this is Huffschmidt and Smith, they've actually got Christopher convinced that I was part of a big Zionist setup.
Good God.
Asking him to host for me on my program.
Well, I'll be done. Well, you know, I knew Chris, and he's a very fine person, and I could not believe that he was involved in something like that.
Yeah, it's
so you
it's,
can get in it very innocently, but if you're not on guard against, you can't be on guard of anything, of everything. I mean, there are rattlesnakes around, and there are explosives around, and you try to watch out for yourself, but you can't guard against everybody.
that's part of the problem. And, you know, I don't know if you ever came across this guy, Roy Bullock, the ADL agent.
No, I never did, Ron.
Oh, you never met him. That's interesting.
I met a lot of ADL agents, but I don't think I ever met him.
Yeah, he was around for so long, I figured maybe you may have actually met him and didn't know who he was. But
well, some of these ADL agents were so well known that everybody knew them. They were like a political person. And I used to see some of these same ADL agents around at every meeting.
Well, you know, I'll tell you the funniest thing, Eustace. I remember one time when I was having dinner with this guy, Roy Bullock, after I knew he was an ADL agent, although I don't think he knew at that time I knew he was. But you know, he asked me about somebody else who I believe to be an ADL agent, and I said to Bullock, he asked me about this person, and he said, "Who is this guy?" And I said, "Well, I think he's an ADL agent." And Bullock expressed surprise. He says, "Oh, really? Well, you know, the funny thing about it is, to this day, Eustace, I don't know whether or not this guy actually did any work for the ADL, and the way the ADL operates, they may not have even told Roy Bullock that this other guy was an ADL agent."
Well, in intelligence work, you don't tell people anything.
No, exactly. But I'll tell you what's really interesting. This other person, who I'm not going to name on the air, but I'm sure you probably met him, or again, you know, we're probably in his company in his presence at one time or another, because the guy used to pop up at, you know, all the Patriot meetings and all the Arab American meetings and everything, you know. This guy tried to insinuate himself into the inner circle of Congressman Jim Traficant from Ohio.
Oh, my God.
And I found out from somebody, Traficant and I had a couple mutual friends, I found out that Traficant himself suspected this guy of being a Mossad agent.
Oh, yeah. Well, they give themselves away in certain ways. They ask too many questions. That's the first thing. And they ask information. They ask for information which they have no right to know.
Mm-hmm.
That usually gives it away.
Yeah, well, the thing I've noticed about Smith and Huffschmidt and now Boleyn is that they pretend to have the ultimate answer to everything. That no one, they say that they're the ones who are providing the truth, And they say that everybody else, from Mike Piper and Willis Cardo and David Duke and Mark Glenn and Mark Farrell, you know, they say that everybody else is covering up the ultimate truth, but they are the ones who have the real truth.
Well, they got my confidence because they never asked too many questions, and they seemed to be sincere. And that's one reason that I went as far as with them as I did.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
But because they never slipped up. You know, the agents would always ask you one too many questions, and then you'd realize what the guy was doing.
Yeah, I think what makes them unique now is that they have something that's really unique now, and that's called the Internet, and they've got this broadcast where they don't let anybody call in to ask any questions.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you know, I mean, now...
the question, which I missed. I like questions all the time.
Yeah, well, this is one of the tactics they've used. And, you know, the funny thing is now, oops, well, here we have a break coming up, Eustace. Hang on there with us.
Ladies and
gentlemen, we've got Eustace Mullins on the line, the one, the only Eustace Mullins. Stay tuned for more. This is Michael Collins Piper coming to you on RBNLive.com, courtesy of Headache Dagon. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Michael Collins Piper on board here tonight with Eustace Mullins. We're here courtesy of Headache Dagon, the all-natural cure for headaches. Yeah, I'm holding this bottle in my hand, folks. I think if you haven't tried it out, you'd better try it out because it works for me. As I always remind you, I was endorsing the product before I knew they were ever going to be my sponsor. We're here with Eustace Mullins talking about these characters, Daryl Bradford Smith. Apparently, that's not even Smith's name. It's either Seder, like the Jewish ritual, Seder or Setter, and Eric Kupfschmidt, whose sister is married to Rupert Murdoch's son. And, of course, now they've recruited, in a cult-like fashion, they recruited Christopher Boleyn, and inexplicably, they've now started to go after Mark Lane, who served as an attorney for many, many years for Liberty Lobby, and now they're saying he's in control of American Free Press. But, you know, it's really funny, Eustace. Mark Lane is not even the lawyer for American Free Press, and he hasn't been it. And since American Free Press was established in 2001, Mark hasn't even been in that office more than probably 8 times. So if he was in control of American Free Press, he wouldn't be controlling it very well. And you know, I'm going to tell something on the air tonight, Eustace, I've never said publicly, but you know, back about, oh, it's going on about 10 years ago now, you know, they're suggesting that Mark Lane was in control of Liberty Lobby when Willis Cardo founded it and was running it. You know, Mark Lane didn't even become Liberty Lobby's lawyer until about 1983. But back in probably 1994, Willis Cardo was getting ready to sever Mark Lane's relationship with Liberty Lobby. It was just over, and this is personal, you know, private information, but I think it's important to point it out. Willis was actually getting ready to sever Mark's relationship. It was an argument over money. You know, lawyers want money, and Willis is tight-fisted, as everybody knows. You've known Willis a lot longer than I have. And, you know, I was the one who convinced Willis not to release Mark Lane as Liberty Lobby's lawyer. So now Daryl Bradford Smith and Christopher Boleyn would say that was proof that I was a Zionist agent trying to keep Mark Lane on the staff there. But, you know, Mark is the one who saved Liberty Lobby from the Zionists on numerous occasions. He beat Mel Mermelstein.
Oh, I know he did win the Mermelstein.
Yeah, he won with E. Howard Hunt. He won with William F. Buckley Jr.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, we were sued by another person over a very strange matter up in Michigan, Mark won that lawsuit up there. And then when Liberty Lobby actually sued Jack Anderson, and I don't need to remind you what a rotten guy Jack Anderson was, that case went all the way to the Supreme Court. and Anderson settled with Liberty Lobby.
Oh my God!
Rather than going to trial on the case, and you know the funny thing is, even the final case that ended up destroying Liberty Lobby, which was instigated by a CIA agent with ties to the Mossad, Andrew Allen.
Oh my God!
Mark wasn't even the primary lawyer on that case. If he had been, I think we would have won. But we had a crooked lawyer in California who was on the scene, who got the case going before Mark even got there. And so this is the thing. And so now, of all things, they're saying that this anti-Zionist Jewish lawyer was really the secret Zionist controller of Liberty Lobby and now of American Free Press. See, now, talk about twisting the truth. You know what I mean? Used to say they have this way of, you know, spreading disinformation and getting people confused. And that is always the hallmark of someone who's trying to destroy the nationalist movement. And you've seen it yourself, you know, years and years before I ever got involved. And just like with Sanford Griffith, that was the hallmark of his operations as well.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
no, Griffiths, I felt like I was being disloyal to the memory of Eric to even sit and drink wine with him. But he was used to that sort of thing, and it didn't bother him one bit.
It's kind of interesting about this guy, about Sanford Griffiths. He actually had been also a British intelligence agent during World War II.
Oh, well, that's typical. Well, you see, Sir William Wiseman during World War I, Colonel House ran the whole intelligence operations of the United States Army, which not many people know. And I actually met and talked to William Wiseman.
Oh, really? That's interesting. I didn't. Now, that's funny. I thought he had died years before you would have ever been around. But now that's interesting.
No, he was still alive. And Varick told me one day, he said, go down and talk to Wiseman. So I did.
That's very interesting.
And he received me. I wrote him a letter. And he said, well, come in and we'll have a chat. But he didn't tell me anything, of course. But it was quite an experience meeting him because he's one of the most notorious people in the world.
Yeah, and you know, the amazing thing is they have so much money behind them.
Oh, all the money in the world,
yeah.
All the money you can print.
Yes, exactly, right out of the Federal Reserve, exactly. See, that's the whole thing. I mean, this is all part of the problem, you know. Independent networks like the Republic Broadcasting Network and newspapers like American Free Press have to go out and literally beg for money. And writers like you, your books, they don't sell them in the major bookstores. You got to sell them on your own to survive.
No, but I printed them myself, and I paid for every penny of it out of myself. And I never solicited a dime from anybody.
Yeah, well, that's the way. Okay, well, Eustace, we got another break coming up here. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the half hour. We have a good 25-minute stretch after the break. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. This is Michael Collins Piper coming to you from Washington, D.C., which, of course, is the headquarters of American Free Press. Well, Washington, D.C. is very far away from Idaho. And, you know, up in Idaho, there's been a bedrock of American nationalists, people involved in the Christian identity movement and so forth. And one of those leaders was the late Pastor Richard Butler. Well, you know, Daryl Bradford Smith and his colleagues, Eric Huffschmidt, who I call Fishbait, and Christopher Boleyn, are now saying and have been saying for a long, long time that Richard Butler and the Aryan Nations were a front group for the Anti-Defamation League and the Southern Poverty Law Center. That's the same thing, of course, they're saying about American Free Press and about dozens and dozens of other people. Well, Eustace, you knew Richard Butler quite well. Do you think Richard Butler was a front man for the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center? Eustace? Did we lose Eustace? Okay, I don't know. We don't have... He may have stepped away from the phone for a moment. Eustace, are you there? That's one of the problems, folks, when you don't have the times in front of you when you're a guest on the program. I've done this myself. You step away from the phone for a moment. Give Eustace a moment here. Eustace, are you there? We seem to have lost Eustace. I don't know if he thought that was the end of the... Oh, there, Eustace.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I should have told... You know, I was just saying, sometimes when I'm on a guest on other people's programs, I don't know how long the breaks are, and then I come
you
back...
You said you stopped in about 5 minutes, so I got to drink water right away.
Yeah, all right. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, oh, that's all right.
When we came back, Eustace, I was pointing out that Daryl Bradford Smith has been repeatedly claiming for the last couple years that... that Pastor Richard Butler and the Aryan Nations were fronts for the Southern Poverty Law Center and for the Anti-Defamation League.
Oh, they weren't. I knew Pastor Butler very well and I respected him. It would never have been a front for the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Yeah, well, see, again, this is the kind of ridiculous claims that Daryl Bradford Smith has been making. And, you know, it's funny. When Smith was trying to bring me into his circle, he and Huffschmidt were saying all sorts of nice things.
Oh, yeah.
About me on their website. But then when they saw I wasn't going to go along, they were attacking all these other people and trying to link my name to theirs.
Well, this is sort of what's happened in my case, that I was lured into attacking people whom I didn't want to attack at all.
Yeah, well, see, this is what they were doing. They were trying to use my credibility and saying that they kept saying that the only honest people, this is how they were doing it. They were saying, well, Daryl Bradford Smith is honest, and Eric Huffschmidt is honest, and Christopher Boleyn is honest, and Michael Collins Piper is honest. And then they would give this list of other people who weren't honest. So they were trying to make it look like I was on their side and attacking these other people.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, Richard Butler, we saw what happened to Richard Butler. I mean, they took everything.
That was a tragedy. Butler was a fine person.
Yeah, and they took everything away from him.
Oh, they did. That estate over there was worth about $5 million.
Yeah, and they fought, and the Southern Poverty Law Center took it all away from them, and yet Smith and Company say that the Aryan Nations was a front for the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center. And you know, it's funny.
That's absolutely libelous.
Yeah, I mean, it's too bad Pastor Butler isn't around. He could bring a very very good lawsuit there against them and prove what liars they are. You know, and,
well, he was a very pure person who had no money, and who was totally dedicated, and. As far as I know, never asked anybody for anything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a tragedy. And of course, he's not around to be able to defend himself. But
no. But he put in a good life. He fought all the way.
You know, another thing too. Something that Smith has been doing is he's been promoting Ben Friedman. Now, you knew Ben Friedman.
Oh, I knew Ben Friedman, and I used to have a breakfast at his home in New York every morning.
It was. Do you think Ben Friedman was for real?
Well, I kind of think that. See, when I was working at the Library of Congress and I was writing for Common Sense, which Ben totally supported with his money, and he had as in charge of the paper was an ADL agent named Charles Smith. And believe me, I didn't even know what kind of company I was in there, because I was as naive as they come. I was a dumb kid from the country. I was working at the Library of Congress, and so I started writing articles for Connie McGinley, and I was writing the whole paper because I had so much information that I was writing the whole paper under five different pen names. And so I was working with the Library of Congress one afternoon, and in walks this Jew, and he comes right up to my desk. He says, "Are you Eustace Wallace?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And he started pumping me like a detective. He said, "Where are you getting your information? Who is paying you?" And questions like that. Well, of course, questions like that are a dead giveaway to me. That is a bad agent to fool with. So I never, the rest of my life, I was never entirely sure about Ben Friedman.
That's very interesting because... Smith has been saying that Ben Friedman, like I say, he was the ultimate source on everything regarding Zionism.
Oh, my God. I never heard him say that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You check out that website, and that's all he talks about is that Ben Friedman is the ultimate source on Zionism.
Well, it's funny that he's promoting Ben Friedman because I always had my doubts of it then.
That's very, very interesting. That's interesting to know that because...
I was as close to him as anybody.
Yeah, and again, you know, this is the kind of thing, you know, in this business, in this movement, these agents get in there and...
Agents are on. The first time I went to Chicago and people start telling me there's agents everywhere, I couldn't believe it because the people who are agents were the ones that were spouting the most terrific patriotic slogans you ever heard in their life.
Well, Eustace, I tell you, I always knew, I myself knew how bad it was, but, you know, it wasn't until, I suppose, just the last year, and it's the first chance I ever got to see your book, A Writ for Martyrs, in which you've reproduced a lot of these reports that were put together by ADL spies and given to the FBI about you and everything and things that FBI agents...
Yeah, well, I should have gone into the ADL agents thing more completely in that book. I should have had a whole chapter on it.
But it's amazing to see how closely they would place people next to you and to try to get people to manipulate you or get information out of you. Yeah,
I'm sure many people that have placed to get near me and tried to manipulate me, I never had a clue as to what was going on.
You know, Eustace, I've told this story on the air, so it's nothing new, but we got some, when Liberty Lobby sued the ADL years ago, we got some ADL files that showed that they had actually managed to get one of their agents riding on a plane beside Willis Cardo to see what paperwork he was working on during his trips back and forth between California and Washington.
You know, they might have done that to me, Ben. I never knew it because I did speak to one guy on a trip to Florida once, and when I mentioned my book, the Federal Reserve book, he got very cold and wouldn't speak to me again. So he must have been placed there, and he was a Jewish fellow, and he definitely was a plant.
Yeah, well, see, this is the thing. You know, people until they've actually experienced it, people are often surprised to see how manipulative and aggressive.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. You know, the amazing thing about it is, you know, for years and years, people were afraid to mention the fact that J. Edgar Hoover was so close to the ADL.
Well, I hesitated to mention that to anybody in Washington, D.C., right outside of his office.
No, yeah, you're one of the rare exceptions to that. I know going back years and years ago, I remember reading a very good piece that you wrote for Jim Warner in his publication, the Christian Defense League publication. You wrote a very long, very detailed article.
Oh, I did. I still have copies of that. It's a wonderful article.
And you know, it's funny, we often had problems, just as recently as an article I wrote in American Free Press a couple years ago, I pointed out that J. Edgar Hoover was actually in control of the American Communist Party. And
Jack Lovestone wrote his book for him.
Yeah, I got so many angry letters from people who just could not believe that J. Edgar Hoover could do anything wrong.
Well, H.L. Hunt, you know, revered J. Edgar Hoover and anybody from the FBI. Anybody from the FBI could go to work for his company anytime. And that's one thing that shocked me about him, because I couldn't believe he could be taken advantage of like that.
Well, you know, you and I know, and I mean, like, there's so many good people who have been in American intelligence, in the CIA and in the FBI, who are good people, who are on our
side. Known some of them. I lived in their homes.
Yeah, well, also, like, now, for example, kind of interesting, Hofschmidt and Smith are now saying that Mark Lane, you know, Mark Lane was in Army intelligence during World War II when he was a kid.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I didn't know anything about Mark Lane.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is, they're saying that's proof that he's some sort of Zionist agent, but, you know, it was Robert Williams who wrote one of the first early exposés of the Anti-Defamation League.
Oh, I have copies of that somewhere.
Yeah,
it's a great book.
And he was an Army intelligence operative.
Oh, yes.
And the other thing, too, it's kind of interesting. There's been a recent book that's been put out called The Jewish Threat, and what it points out is that there were a lot of top people in Army intelligence who were anti-Zionist.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, it's one of these things where they take a little fact and then try to confuse us with it, you know. And, there have been a lot of very serious anti-Zionist Jews who are very, very sincere. And then there have been a lot of people who have posed as good conservatives who were actually run lock, stock, and barrel by the Zionists, and Ronald Reagan's among them.
Oh, I tell people every day. Ronald Reagan brought the neocons from the Hoover Institute in California. He brought them to Washington, and that's why we're in Iraq today. It was those neocons that he brought from California that got us into this mess.
Eustace, I have to say, and I'm going to say this on the air, that I think it was probably, probably back in about 1990, you did an interview with Tom Valentine on the Spotlights radio program.
Oh, yeah.
In which you, and we ran that later in a special report that we mailed out to 100,000-200,000 people, a transcript of your interview with Valentine. It was in that interview that you really put your finger on the fact that the Trotskyite communists, Zionists.
Well, I was the one that created that. I taught Pat Buchanan what a neoconservative was. He's a Trotskyite communist.
Well, I have no doubt that you know, I talked about Wes Hooker's role in all this, too, and you and Hooker were good friends back in the 50s. And
oh, yes.
Hooker was wise to that, too. And, you know, a lot of people thought he was crazy for saying that. But
it was so obvious to me, and it was obvious to Wes. And we never dreamed anybody would question that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, and you know, the funny thing is, Eustace, when you look back on it now, it's so totally obvious, but so many people were taken in by these Trotskyite Zionists when they started calling themselves conservatives and using people like William F. Buckley Jr. and Human Events and infiltrating the traditional conservative movement.
Well, they were taken in by Ronald Reagan because he was such a good actor.
Well, that's right. He was the ultimate front man.
One of my best friends just sent me a beautiful Ronald Reagan calendar from the Reagan library as a Christmas present. And I thought to myself, this guy, I have worked with him for 25 years, and he still knows absolutely nothing about me.
Well, see, that's it. That's just good. You know, this is the thing that always amazes me, Eustace, is that you can put information in front of people, and yet they still have their preconceived notions.
That's right. It's like a concrete block in front of them. They can't see around it.
Yeah, and you know, Ronald Reagan had a real nice smile, you know, and he was real friendly and jovial, but that's the kind of people that are the ideal front men for these manipulators behind the scenes.
Well, Reagan is the reason our boys are still dying in Iraq, because the Iraq War could never have been done without Ronald Reagan and the neocons.
That's exactly right. I mean, he's the one who first brought them in. Richard Pearl and Stephen Bryan and this whole gang.
Oh, I know he brought all those people in. And, you know, tomorrow night Bush is going on the air, and he's going to ask for another $100 billion to sink in Iraq. And I claim that he's going to make his plea for funds this way. He's going to say, I know that I have lost the war for 4 years, but now I have found a way to lose it very quickly, and it won't cost us much money. And people will go for that. They'll support that program.
You know, Eustace, I wish you were wrong, but I'm afraid you're right. That's what I always say. You know?
I'm always right. That's why I'm always right. That's why nobody can argue with
me. That's one of the curses of being right, even if it's something somebody doesn't want to hear.
Well, it's always something somebody doesn't want to hear.
Yeah,
it's like,
I mean,
my friends don't want to hear a word about Ronald Reagan after all these years.
You know, I remember years ago, you know, what's his name? Kent Stefkin.
Oh, yes, I remember Kent.
Yeah, he wrote a book exposing Ronald Reagan, and it caused...
Oh, I remember that book,
yeah. But you know what's very, very interesting? And, you know, Willis Carto was a good friend of Kent Stefkin's, and I knew a couple other good friends of Kent Stefkin's, but you know, Stefkin would never allow that book to be reprinted.
I never saw it again. I never had a copy of it.
That's exactly why, because he allowed it to be printed, like, in 1968, I believe.
Uh-huh.
But then when Reagan started really to move towards the White House in 1979 and 1980, people wanted to reprint that book. But for whatever reason, Kent Stefkin would just sit on it. He would not let anybody reprint it. No one ever knew why.
Oh, he could have sold a million copies of that book.
Exactly. That could have kept Ronald Reagan that could have really undercut him.
It could have. It could have. Kent Steph could have made a lot of money on it. Somebody must have paid him a lot not to reprint it.
there was definitely something going on, you know, and I'll tell you what, Willis Cardo was the first person to tell me that. And then I'll tell you who else repeated that story to me. I don't know if you ever knew Clyde Reynolds, Dr. Clyde Reynolds.
I don't think I remember.
Okay, well, Clyde was a good man. Clyde was a homeopathic physician, and Clyde grew up with Kent Stefkin. And Clyde and Kent Stefkin remained very, very good friends all throughout their lives. And Clyde expressed his puzzlement as to why that book couldn't be reprinted. And, you know, I'll tell you what, there's another fellow who was a very good friend of Clyde and Kent Stefkin. And I'm not going to announce his name on the air. I'll tell you off the air sometime. But he was a member of the United States Congress, and he was not a conservative. He was a liberal member of the United States Congress, but he was a very good friend of Kent Stefkin and also Clyde Reynolds. They grew up together, and he's very wise to these things that we've been talking about here and now. And so there's some surprising people in positions of power.
Oh, I saw when I was on Capitol Hill, I saw a lot of strange bedfellows.
That's right. All right, Eustace, well, hang on. We got about 5 minutes to go here. The break will be about 3 minutes, and then we'll have five more minutes to go before we wrap up the hour.
Oh, that, we'll wrap it up then.
All right. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Michael Collins Piper here with Eustace Mullins. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Had a very interesting 55 minutes here with Eustace Mullins, and we've got just a couple minutes to go, and I would be remiss in not mentioning Eustace, our good friend in Japan, Dr. Ryu Ota.
I'm going to see him pretty soon.
I'm glad to hear that, because I know they were trying to get you over there in June, and things got screwed up there with the passport.
Well, my passport was sabotaged by the passport office itself in Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
They took out my signed application and replaced in my envelope a fake address for me in Phoenix, Arizona. So they never could get in touch with me. And that's why when they finally got in touch with me, they said, well, you had the wrong address. I said, I've lived at the same address for 35 years. And I couldn't understand what they talked about. And I finally talked to a woman in the passport office, and she told me that your address and your envelope with your check and your pictures for your a photograph for your passport, had an address for you in Phoenix, Arizona. And I said, I've never had an address in Phoenix, Arizona in my life.
Well, it's obvious. I mean, they were trying, that was just an obvious sabotage. And,
it was sabotage because they claimed they could not reach me because I gave them the wrong address. I did not put that Phoenix, Arizona address in my envelope.
Yeah, well, see,
somebody
up
there had to do it.
It just appeared by magic. Yeah, that's some of the magical powers that they have that we don't have. You know, I mean,
no, somebody was paid to put that fake address in my envelope.
You know, I was,
and that's
why I
couldn't make my trip to Japan.
I was totally surprised because the day I did leave for Malaysia was the day before you were supposed to leave for Japan. So I remember while I was in Malaysia, I remember thinking, well, Eustace isn't really that far away. And then I got back 3 weeks later, and I got a call from the folks in Japan, and they told me what had happened, that you hadn't even made it. So
I never got off the ground, no.
No, I know they're very anxious to have you come over there. And
I'm ready to go now. I've got the passport.
Yeah, I know. They told me they'd like to set up a foundation to perpetuate your works, and I think it's probably a good idea because the Japanese are very, you've been over there. I don't need to tell you. Those people, they read.
Very serious people. I love being with them.
Yeah, I've never seen so many bookshops in my life, Eustace.
Oh, they are books like crazy. They took me around to some of the shops that were featuring my books, and they were piled up to the ceiling.
Yeah, people, you know, and that's the amazing thing about it. You know, people in other countries are free to read serious works by serious American authors.
Oh, there's bookshops everywhere. A lot of them are upstairs bookshops. You go up a narrow steps, and at the head of the steps is a bookshop. You never see it in this country.
Exactly. I mean, and what's interesting is that so many of those bookshops, and like you say, they have books piled upon books.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you know, all I can say is, thank God for nationalists in Japan and in Germany and all around the world who are standing up to this this Jewish tyranny that's
been... they are, and I encourage them. I celebrated their Constitution Day there with them several years in a row, because in Japan, they don't celebrate Constitution Day. They denounce Constitution Day.
Uh-huh.
Because they're forced on them. They're still under enemy occupation.
That's right. You know, I'll tell you what I took as a special gift for Dr. Ota. I took him a copy of Ralph Townsend's book, Ways That Are Dark.
Oh.
And of course, Ralph Townsend was accused of being a Japanese agent, but he was just a patriotic American.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Eustace, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on the show and setting people straight on this
Daryl
Bradford
because
smear.
It all was a very distasteful episode, which I was very reluctant to get into, and I was pushed into it. And I was shocked when Willis wrote me his letter that he removed me from the masthead of the Barnes Review, because I had never asked to be on it in the first place.
It's this kind of stuff, unfortunately, Eustace, there's a lot of saboteurs around. So.
Well, there's always saboteurs, but all I can do is print my books and get them to as many people as possible, and they read them, and they write me back letters that say, every one of your books is an enduring classic. And to me, that sort of reception is
That says it all. Thanks, Eustace.